Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Perkins Platform. This is a solutions-oriented podcast and live radio show. Each broadcast, we dedicate just about 30 minutes to explore topics of interest for leaders and professionals in education and a variety of other disciplines, and this is your host, Brian Perkins. Well, good morning to those of you on the East Coast. I know we have people who listen in from all over the world, and we're delighted to have you today. You know, I have mentioned previously that, believe it or not, we are entering in just about 2 weeks, 10 years as a podcast. And it's really hard to believe. A lot of times I tell people who've been doing it 10 years, they're like, wait, there were podcasts back then? Yeah, believe it or not. And so the funny thing is that how it got started was just off of a whim. You know, I've told this story a few times, but I know people are constantly asking me how did you start it? Why did you start the podcast? And I think one of my colleagues was just tired of hearing me come and just share these stories, to be honest with you. But they, you know, I early in my career, I was doing a lot of consulting and work in various places, but it took me on airplanes quite frequently. And I would always have the good fortune of meeting people, and I still to this day just happen to sit next to some very interesting people. I've met authors and people who are in movies, on television, and it's just, I guess it's a function of how frequently you happen to appear on an airplane. But I'd meet these really interesting people, or I'd be at a reception for a conference or something else, and I'd have great conversations. And they would be these conversations that for some take place right next to a water fountain at work, but for me they were taking place just different places, in the lobby of a hotel, standing in line for TSA. They might be actually sitting on the airplane. We have these great conversations. So week after week, I'd come back and I'd tell my colleagues, and it would always start like, guess who I talked to this week? Or they would ask, okay, it would be Monday morning. People would come to my office almost together and say, okay, tell us the next story. Who did you see this weekend? Sometimes I wouldn't, but it was kind of a running joke. And where after a certain point, I guess after podcasts had become a real thing, one of my colleagues said, you should have your own TV show. Like, where in the world is Brian Perkins? But then later, on a more serious note, said, actually, you should think about starting a podcast because you have some really interesting things to share with people. And so I looked into it. I said, oh, this looks like it could be fun. And so I did. And here we are 10 years later, me basically talking to just people that I might read an article. I might see them on YouTube. And just so you know, my method is quite simple. It is finding articles and things that I'm personally interested in and then reaching out to people and saying, hey, do you want to have a conversation? I think people would love to hear us talk about your work. And that's what I think is the success of Perkins Platform. Today, we're scheduled to have Dr. Eva Krakow, who is a expert on the topic of leadership and decision-making, but it really as it relates to kind of neuroscience and psychology. Dr. Krakow is an assistant professor in psychology at the University of Leicester in the U.K., and that's the reason we're at 10 o'clock today, waiting on her to dial in, and I'm hoping that it was not because there's some technical issue on our end. I know I encountered some technical issues, but I'm hoping that she is able to join us and be a part of today's conversation. We're waiting on her to dial in. But in the meantime, I'm happy to facilitate some questions and talk to some people, because I also teach leadership and decision-making in my role here at Columbia University. I teach a course in our master's degree program that is, in fact, entitled Leadership and Decision-Making. I love this course because it is really a dynamic way to help people understand how to consistently make good decisions. And so when Dr. Krakow dials in, we'll go on to the next portion of what I'm not an expert in, but that has been the focus of her research on decision-making, is decision fatigue. And while I didn't know that this was a real area, she does research on it. Now, the reason I say I didn't know that it was a real area, I've experienced what I would consider to be decision fatigue, but I had no idea that it was something that was being studied. At least I think I experienced it. I would imagine there are a number of leaders out there that, like myself, spend all day, every day, making decisions, day after day after day, and quite honestly, a lot of times it just turns out to be that I don't even want to make a decision about what I eat, whether I take Uber or Lyft, or whether I walk or run. I just want things to already be done. I know that I have experienced it. But when I have students who first enter the course that I teach on leadership and decision making, is an introductory course, and I always tell them that we're just scratching the surface. So one of the first questions I get is that, so what, when you say decision-making, I mean, don't we make decisions? Aren't they all kind of independently made? And how is it that we spend time making decisions in some organized or structured way? And I give them strategies for making decisions. Now, a lot of people think that these are all about making business decisions or making personal decisions. The truth is that it can be, these things can be applied no matter what to a variety of decisions that one would make. And so while we're waiting on Dr. Krakow, I want to share with you some of the things that I do to when I introduce it to my students, just to let them know what decision-making is about. And so I'll start with, essentially, there are seven components that we use and describe to help people make decisions. And this, I want you to understand that what this is about consistently making good decisions, or consistently making the best decisions possible. When I'm called to consult or what have you, a lot of times people are like, I need help making a decision. I need help figuring something out. We go down this path. So if any of you have any questions, I want to give you the number where you can dial in, and I'm happy to entertain anyone for a short time. But it is, the call-in number is 657-383-1481. Again, 657-383-1481. Let me go back. So with this process, structure for making consistently good decisions, that there are individual decision-making strategies and there are group decision-making strategies. I'm going to focus on just briefly today about making good decisions as an individual. But these also, some of these can be structured where groups can make it. But I'm going to talk about these seven components that I teach about. The first is about, the first thing you do is describe the problem or the goal. What is the issue? What are we trying to fix? Where are we trying to go? Often I say, you know, if we were in New York City driving to California, we have some decisions to make. Right offhand, our decisions that we need to make are either like train, plane, or automobile, right? We have to say, first of all, we know our goal, and maybe even before that, sometimes we ask, where are we going? But if we know what our destination is, we have to first make some decisions about how we get there. So plane, train, or automobile. And so that's what we're talking about, the description of the problem or the goal. There is an initial decision. Problem is that there's a gap between where I am and where I want to be. And so you have to make a decision. So that's framing this, and some people say, well, don't frame it as a problem. Frame it as a challenge. So whatever language you want to use here, the issue is that there's a gap. And there is, so where I am, for example, is New York City. Where I want to be is in Los Angeles. And so what I'm trying to do in the description of the problem is acknowledging and really understanding that there is a current state and another state, meaning state as in way of being, not actual physical U.S. state, but a current place where I am and another place where I want to be. And so how I define that is critically important. A lot of times, it is, as it relates to decisions we're making, being able to describe or define the problem is more than half of the issue. And often that there are people who are treating symptoms, if you will, but are actually defining things as problems when they are really just symptomatic of issues that are the real problem. And so the description, the definition of the problem is absolutely critical. So that's the first component, is accurately and appropriately describing the problem or goal. Secondly, is to identify what additional data is needed. And you can say data or information. What else do I need to know? And so you have to kind of take stock of what you know and then figure out if there are things that I need to know. What I think about understanding what I know, and I get people laugh a lot when I say this, is that you also have to know what you don't know. Now, that may sound really weird. Is that there are things that I can know and I can get that information, but for example, if I need to know how many people there are in a room so I can figure out if I need another room, is that I can say, oh, additional data needed. What I don't know is how many people are there. And that is, in fact, you know, understanding what I don't know, which is a critical piece of information. So the second component is the additional data that is needed. The third thing that I recommend as a part of making good decisions is to take a stakeholder analysis. So who in this decision, you know, who are the people in this decision do I need to consider? So it doesn't matter. This year I used as an example, it's like, hey, I mean, this could be things like a decision about what refrigerator am I going to buy? And sometimes I have to decide whether I'm going to involve other people in that decision. But in thinking about making a decision to purchase a refrigerator, that in my stakeholder analysis, I discover who it's important to. What are the features that I'm ultimately going to consider because of who my stakeholders are? Who's going to use it? Who? And in some cases, they may be stakeholders, but they don't hold an opinion or a preference. And so, but I still have to consider my stakeholders in that. So where we are now, we've described the problem or the goal. We know that there's additional data that we need, and we figure out, or if we need it. Thirdly is we do a stakeholder analysis, and then we figure out how we're going to make the decision. And we generally call that the decision model. So is it going to be a decision model where I am the sole person to make the decision? Or am I going to involve other people? And if I involve other people, how I'm going to involve other people? So what is the way that we will reach the decision? Is it all mine? Am I going to get consultation from other people? Am I going to let others make the decision or have influence? How am I going to make a real decision here? So we call that the decision model. Next, we're at number five, is that we consider options. What are all my options? And so we go back to what is the refrigerator we're going to purchase, is that there's models that have ice makers. There are models that have ice makers that also do whole ice in the freezer and ice that comes out in the door, or crushed ice, no crushed ice, water, chilled water, a light on the front. And now we have those that have monitors and internet capability on the door. But so what are my options? And so that also applies to just decisions that we're making about what room we're going to use, or how to handle a human resources challenge, but that we have to put our options out so that we know what we're considering. One option that people often overlook is the option to do nothing. So if we use the analogy I had with the refrigerator, you might decide, look, I'm not going to buy one. But that's an option. And in understanding that and doing that, choosing that option, which is that a decision has to be made, and if the option is to do nothing, in some cases, doing nothing is doing something. And so the choice not to act is, in fact, there are consequences for no action as well. So, but it is one of the most, in my experience, the most overlooked options is the option to do nothing. So what have we said? Describe the problem or the goal first. Consider your additional data that you might require or that you need to make a good decision. You do a stakeholder analysis. You then decide how you're going to make the decision. So is it an individual decision? Is it going to be a group decision or what? You consider your options. And then number six is develop an action plan. So what are my steps? So if I go back to, I'm in New York and I want to go to California, my action plan includes the steps. So I mentioned earlier, plane, train, automobile. So if my plan is plane, then which airport? So there are a series of decisions. How am I going to get to the airport? Once there, what airline am I going to take? What time? So all of these are decisions along the way that a lot of times, now I'm not saying that you go through all seven components as you make individual decisions, some decisions are really quick decisions. So you don't need to spend all of your time doing individual decisions. But what you think about is overall what I'm doing first, which is trying to figure out how to go from New York to LA, as an example. So actually developing an action plan. What am I going to do to accomplish closing the gap, which is what I desire to do, going from one place to another? So actually developing an action plan. And then the last of the seven components to good decision making is your outcome evaluation benchmarking. How will I know? This is the basic question you ask yourself. How will I know when I'm successful? How do I know when I'm successful? What will be the measure of success for me as I solve this problem, or as I make this particular decision? So then the answer is, when you circle back, is that I will know I have made a good decision when it looks like this. And for us, going from New York to LA, it is when I see the buildings that I'm looking to see in Los Angeles, when I see the sign that says Los Angeles, that's when I know I'm going to be there. But this component is also overlooked. And if not overlooked, because a lot of times people really do have an idea of what they want the future to look like. They have an idea of where they want to be. But it is the next part, the second part of it that I talked about. I said outcome evaluation and benchmarking is that having kind of signposts along the way to know that I'm on my way to success. So if it is that I am planning to go from one place to another, and I never look up to check to see, am I on the right track? I could be a year down the road before realizing that this isn't working. And so you want to benchmark your decisions, especially those that are the kinds of decisions that have long-term implications, the ones that you don't really get to the end. So we make a decision to use a certain product, and then we know that it's not going to work. We're not going to see the results we want for a year. But there should be some indicator to show that it is working and we're getting there. We're moving in the right direction. And so make sure that as you make decisions, that there are these clues that are out there. That you explicitly, for the most part, you define yourself. You say, in 3 months, even though I'm going to use this over the next year, in 3 months I'll be here. In 6 months I'll be here. And in some cases, it's even a shorter time frame. At the end of the day today, we'll be here. And so just to recap, those seven components. So what we're talking about here today is decision-making and the seven components I use for people to make good decisions. One, as I said, description of the problem or goal. Two, consider what additional data you need. Number three is that you conduct a stakeholder analysis. Number four is you decide what decision model you're going to use, and we're talking about individual versus group for the most part. Number five is that you articulate the options. You have options that must be considered, but that you delineate those. Number six is that you develop an action plan. And number seven is you decide what your outcome evaluation and benchmarking will be. And so what this is essentially is a plan for how you consistently make good decisions. Now, I've had some people ask, but when do you know to apply these? Well, that's where less of the science and more of the art comes in, is knowing that you know, this is a decision that's an important decision to make. And so I think I need to be deliberate and intentional about how I make the decision. You know, I don't know how many of you listening in are this way, but I've run across a lot of leaders that if you ask them, you say, look, that was brilliant. You made a decision and it had these outcomes. How did you know to do it that way? And a lot of times, more times than not, they'll say, I just looked at it and I made the decision. You know, it just seemed like this was the right thing to do. And there are a lot of people that operate and have a great deal of luck and success by just off the cuff making decisions. Now, some of it, they apply these strategies, and it's just because they know that, you should consider other people. But there's no consistent way. And so when I ask them, how did you make that decision? It was a great decision. Most people say, I don't know, just did it. I mean, it just seemed to make sense to me. And what I'm suggesting to those of you out there in leadership positions is that you don't have to make decisions that have uncertain results. Now, there, to some extent, you should be able to predict what it is that you are going to have as an outcome, or at least in the direction. And so this is a strategy, and this is just one of many that I teach about, but this is a strategy. You say, this is how you can consistently make good decisions. So if you say, well, look, I haven't been unsuccessful at this. It's like, okay, great. So now what I just showed you is a way to get even better at making good decisions. And if you apply this, what's so powerful about this is that this is a way to intentionally, deliberately make decisions in such a way that you have positive and good outcomes. One other thing, I know I'm almost out of time now, but one other thing about this is that when some of these, when I was talking about the art of it, also it's just that what shouldn't happen is that you over-apply this. Because there are times, like, for example, you're the leader, and someone comes to you and says, hey, there's a fire out in the hallway. You don't have to go through the seven components of making decisions to understand that we know we're supposed to get out of this room and kind of figure out how we get out, you know, whether it's the window or it's another door. But so I don't want you to over-apply this strategy for making good decisions. And that's where, you know, more so the practice in leadership that comes in around applying decision-making models where you say, I've become more adept at knowing when I need to pause, I need to take a little more time. Sometimes we don't have a lot of time to do this, but in this case, what we presume is that there's at least enough time to consider other information. And by consistently thinking about those components that I delineated for you, it just makes for more predictable results, but making sure that you are maximizing your results. So I hope that was helpful. And unfortunately, you know, here we are a half hour later. Something must have happened, and Dr. Krakow couldn't join us. But I just wanted to, in the area of decision-making, I'm going to make sure that we reschedule her and make sure that she can come in, because I think there is something to, for sure, this construct of decision fatigue. Some of the people that I've talked to as well in leadership roles, it's just have experienced it as well. But as I was saying, you know, this month and in a couple of weeks we'll be celebrating a full 10 years, a full decade of the Perkins platform. And we have a special treat that you'll we'll announce and you'll see on social media, particularly those of you who have learned about Perkins Platform on LinkedIn and maybe some other places, that we have a week long of shows every single night the week celebrating our 10 years. And so I'm excited about it, and I hope you are too. It's been such a joy and delight for me in the week. It's one of the highlights of my week to sit down and talk to. I've been very privileged to talk to some of the world's leading researchers and authors here on this show. And so I'm looking forward to the next 10 years of just learning more, and I hope you'll be with me on the journey. So we have next week, we have a really good show planned for you as well. We're gonna announce more about that week of shows. We're pulling those all together. But until next week, go well, stay well.